Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our first Thursday in February. Small group tonight. A lot of things that I've been thinking about all day, and one is a koan that in recent days I've been thinking about. It was mentioned in one of our texts in the study group, and I've been annoyed by the way that it was treated in that text by the author. So I've been sitting with that koan, and it's a koan that's how do you go further from the top of a 100-foot pole? 100 foot being, roughly maybe 40, 50 meters, something. So it's a very tall pole. And the question is, how do you go forward from that? And often we think that, the pole, we're at a very high place. We've arrived somewhere very high. So we can say, oh, we think we've, attained enlightenment, or we've perfected our practice, or we've accomplished some task and we've arrived. And so we're sitting there on the top of this pole. And the question is, how do you go further from that? How can you go further than what you think is the summit, thinking you've arrived? And in the I'll just tell you what in the text that we studied a few weeks ago, the last line of the text is something about the point of Zen practice is to finally step off the 100-foot pole into enlightenment. And that's not it at all. It's not. What is it then? And we have so many examples in every moment in all of our daily life that, wherever we are, we always stick to what we know, whether it's we've arrived at some magnificent place, or whether it's we are, at the bottom of some disaster that has fallen on us, or we are very sick, or we think that, we've won the lottery, so we've arrived, or something. Or we understand, so we've arrived. So wherever it is, we always stick to the top of the pole that we know. Whether it's being a victim, a horrible position, whether it's being a champion, a top position, whatever it is. And this koan challenges us to go further, to take that leap, to jump from that pole, not into enlightenment. I don't even know what that means, but into what we don't know. Let go of our concepts and our ideas and our beliefs, where we think we are, whatever we think the situation is, and make that leap into the unknown, what we sometimes call not knowing in our practice. So take the leap into not knowing. And it's not easy to do if we have this really firm idea of where we are. The reason I was really thinking about it in the past few days for several situations. So, in Portugal, as we've all been exchanging about, there's this terrible disaster with wind and rain and storm. And I'm happy to see Marlene here because I've been very worried about Marlene because she lives in that area. And I had reached out to Seu, and she and Anna had managed to at least find out that Marlene was okay and that her mother was okay and the animals and whatever. And I didn't realize that someone else in our Sangha, Susanna, lived in that area as well. I didn't realize that until today. However, so that situation, also the situation that I've talked about to some extent of my own, the place where I come from in America, the city where I grew up and was born and lived till I came to France 45 years ago, is in the thralls of resisting this big ICE, this big immigration police crackdown. And I've been inspired by how the population has reacted, and I'm not surprised because I know that city. And I'm also really inspired by how the population in Portugal has reacted to this situation, that of great distress, catastrophe, loss, death, in both cases, right? We could say the same thing about Ukraine. We could say the same thing about a car accident. We could say the same thing about the homeless person in the street. We could say the same thing about I solved the crossword puzzle today, and so I'm brilliant, or I really understand. I know what the solution is to this, or I made this beautiful soup tonight, or whatever it is, So many places where we're stuck on the top of that pole, and top is not necessarily good. So when you're in the bottom of this distressful situation of having lost your house in a terrible storm, you're not feeling that you're in this really high accomplished place. But you can become stuck in the place of, oh, poor me, there's nothing I can do, I'm helpless, whatever. And the people around you can be stuck in their place of, oh, I'm fine, oof, I'm okay, or complaining because they don't have electricity, or, being mad at the government or whatever it is. But instead, maybe not everyone, but what we've seen is, just hearing the story of Susanna and of other, I've read elsewhere about this too, of neighbors coming together and helping one another, of people, of, just people in the area, or even, people in our Sangha who are planning to go and help. And there's a movement of people are going to help in that region. Those people are not stuck on the top of their pole of what they should do or not do. They're responding from a position of not knowing. They don't know. They don't know what they can do. They certainly can't solve the whole thing of repairing all the infrastructure, restoring power to everyone in that region of Portugal. But they can't, and their position does not, their reaction and their response does not come from an ideological position, or from an opinion, or from some strategy. It comes from a very human scale of responding to what is right before them, just there. And it's not thinking they have to have some great solution. It's coming and just helping clear the road, or maybe bringing some food to their neighbors, or taking their neighbors, giving them somewhere to sleep. Or maybe they have some access to electricity and helping other people. It's really just coming from a place of not knowing. And in that place of not knowing, then we can bear witness, as we talk about, to the situation as it is. We can see what needs to be done just right there with our neighbor, in our own home. In our own situation, whatever it is. And when we take that leap off the pole into the, into not knowing, that's when we can open to things as they are, to the situation as it is. And then there's a multitude of possibilities of how to respond. But if we have a fixed idea about how we would respond, then we won't. We won't do anything, probably. If we think, oh, we're not strong enough, or I don't want to get involved with those people, or I want to just stay in my own house and take care of my own family. Well, that may be the response that's needed to be done. If we're fixed on that idea, however, we probably won't reach out to someone who else who might need help. And I say this about the situation in Portugal, which I only know from secondhand, and from reading about it in the press, also about, the situation that is dear to me in Minneapolis. And I read that the other day that the city of, and the population of Minneapolis have been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, which is really incredible. I don't think it happens very often that a city and a population are nominated. Of course, they probably won't win, but it's really interesting that they've been nominated. And it's because they're responding like the people in Portugal are responding to what's happening in their neighborhood, in their region, in their communities. And the people in Minneapolis are not responding with violence. They are gathering together, helping the immigrants who are afraid to go out of their houses and bringing them food and taking their children to school, arranging for online teaching so the children don't have to go to school, making sure that they can. I read recently a story about midwives because some of these immigrant women are who are pregnant are too afraid to go to the hospitals because there have been people arrested when they go to hospitals. So the midwives come to women's homes and take care of them at their homes as much as they can, give them checkups and whatever. There's a huge thing of singing in resistance. So huge groups of people are gathering and practicing singing together, and then they go sing in front of the immigration police. Or they go sing in front of the hotels where they are. And they sing, songs about peace and laying down your arms and thinking about others. It's not like they're singing. Of course, there are people chanting ICE out, fuck ICE, all these horrible things that people are saying. But there's also this very peaceful movement. And that's all coming from this place of not knowing and just responding to what's in our heart of wanting to help others. And this comes also from our, a koan like this, how do you go farther from the top of a 100-foot pole? We sit with a koan like that. That's what we do with koans. And it doesn't make any sense. It's like, well, what's a 100-foot pole? So we try to figure out how many feet is in a meter and all of that to make sense of it. And then we try to imagine, well, how could I possibly sit on the top of a pole? And we think, okay, well, maybe there's a little seat there and I'm sitting there. And but how would I eat if I was up? You have all these things. We try to make sense of it. Well, it doesn't make any sense. So the sooner we give up trying to make sense of it, the better chance we have of awakening to whatever it means. Of whatever it's telling us, whatever arises in ourselves of that experience. And so when we've arrived at this place that is magnificent, or this place that is absolutely dreadful, we're challenged by this koan to take a leap, not be stuck there. Leap into the not knowing. And when we leap into the not knowing, that changes what we think about ourselves, what we think about the situation, what we think about the others. We can let go of this attachment to self. We can give up our opinions and our ideas and then see who we truly are, who the other truly is, what is the nature of reality. It opens us to this oneness of all things, of self and others, of all phenomenon, and seeing that that tree in the road is my tree. It's me. I am that tree in that road. I am the neighbor who can't get through that road. I am the wind. I am the rain. I am all things. I am one. It doesn't mean that because I am all of this, there's nothing to do. It means because I am all this, there's everything to do. Everything is possible. So we can have this realization, we can realize this oneness, have a glimpse, a sudden glimpse of it, oneness. And then from there is where we act. So from that, it doesn't mean anything to just experience, have an experience of oneness. That doesn't mean anything. The meaning is what we do with it, how we integrate, how we realize it, how we put it into action, how we respond to the situation in front of us. And we see these examples all over the place. You know, whether it's someone standing up to give their seat in the bus, or you know, letting someone pass in front of you at the in the grocery store, or not being fixed on your idea of who you are. That's a big one. You know, we're really attached to who we are. It's identity we fixed and our image. And so then therefore that limits us. That's such a limitation. Because then, well, how do we, if we act from that position of having to maintain that image, then we're very limited in our the width and the breadth of our action and how we interact with others and how we move in the world. You know, it's like, okay, so tonight we come here. We don't know who will be here. We don't know who will ring the bells. We don't know what will be said. I don't know what will be said. I spoke with Joa this afternoon and he said, so do you know what you're going to talk about tonight? And I said, no, I don't, actually, I don't. And he kind of laughed and he knows what that's like to not know what I'm going to talk about. And yet, because I am so, I've so often worked with this koan, with myself over and over in many different forms of jumping off the 100-foot pole, I have absolute faith. Because actually, when you do this and you jump into the unknowing, there's great faith that is cultivated in that. I have absolute faith that whatever arises will be okay. And in fact, it's even more okay if I don't know what I'm going to talk about. Because then I'm speaking from this place of just this, of not a fixed idea, not thinking this is the subject, these are the people. Because if I had an idea that I was going to speak to a certain person and they weren't here, well, then I would be in big trouble. Or if I was going to address a certain topic, and I had an outline of how I would speak that, I may as well just read the paper. And what's the point of that? You know, there are sanghas, there are teachers who do write their Dharma talks, print them out, and read them. But that's their way of working. That's not the way in our lineage how we experience the Dharma. There, you know, there's Tibetans. You go there and you sit for 4 or 5 hours and listen to them talk. We don't talk that long either. There's not one way that's better than another. There's not even, the message is usually the same. Whether it's the Tibetans or us talking for half an hour, the Tibetans 5 hours, the message is the same. It's just a different approach. Reading the Dharma talk, I'm sure that the intention is the same, but I feel that something gets lost in the advanced preparation and just reading something that has been prepared in advance. Because then you're staying on the top of the 100-foot pole. You're positioning yourself on the top of that pole with this written statement, and then you're reading it. For me, it would be. I'm not going to judge those teachers because it's not about that. It's always about stepping off from the 100-foot pole into not knowing. This koan or any koan. You know, if you've worked on any koans, you know that's what it is. So So I do, I have notes because there's things I was like, oh yeah, this is what came up. I have to remember that. I have to remember that. I remember that. But I don't read them. I just glance back at them and I'm like, oh yeah, okay. Yeah. So this, what I'm saying about responding to the situation as it is and jumping off the 100-foot pole is how we maintain our bodhisattva vow. Our vow to, the first vow of sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them or serve them or see them or whatever, however you want to, whatever verb you want to put in there. That's how we do it. That's how we maintain that vow. We can only do that, serve, see, save, if we take jump off that pole and into the not knowing and respond from this human scale here, now, where we are, with what we have, with whatever ingredients we have. And that's about having this deep, we could call it spirituality, this deep awareness of who we are, who the other is, what is the nature of reality, and how that then manifests in our community. In small actions, and not small like, oh, there's big actions and small actions, but what we think of as being small. And just offering someone a smile maybe, or being kind to that person on the telephone who, is probably someone said, one of the American comics, nighttime comics, said that someone in the US government was accusing the protesters or saying that the immigration police have a terrible, difficult job to do, and they have people screaming in their face all day long and complaining to them and saying how horrible they are, and that that's such a difficult thing to do. And so the comic said, the great majority of people in the service industry, that's their job, that's what they go through every day. Whether it's a waitress, whether it's a cashier, whether it's someone at the bank, whether it's someone at the post office, whether it's one of these people on the who's trying to sell you something on the phone, those people are mistreated all the time, So a very small loving act that can arise from jumping off the 100-foot pole is to show kindness in those situations, to see those people. Who are you? They're not other than you. They're manifesting differently at this moment. Of course, they have a different job, they have a different background, whatever, but you are one. You have the same nature and you want the same thing. You aspire to basic happiness, to put an end to suffering, as we say. And so why would you want to increase that person's suffering by being mean to them or insulting them or complaining, and usually the people who are doing the complaining to those kinds of people are also suffering. It's this vicious circle. We can see that mistreating others comes from a feeling of being mistreated. And so it's this, it feeds itself. So if we can take that step back and sit there, the jump, the step off the 100-foot pole involves sitting down, just sitting with what is, being with what is, not knowing what is, being it, being with it, and then responding from that situation. So I found it very inspiring when I've heard these stories about neighbors helping each other in Portugal. And that, and maybe Marlene can tell us more about this. I'd like to hear what Marlene says. Maybe she didn't have that experience. I don't know. But Susanna told us this on, and that is so moving and so inspiring. Like my neighbors and my community in Minneapolis, I'm so moved and inspired by them. And a lot of the people in Minneapolis who are manifesting and who are out there demonstrating, showing their faces, doing all of this action, they are people who they are not really the ones who are being threatened. Anybody who's going out there in the streets is secure in their immigration status, for whatever reason. They're going out there in the streets for other people, for their community. To maintain the integrity of their community and the humanity and the beauty of that multicultural, multiracial community. And it's really striking to see, who the people out there are. Where, and maybe in Portugal, the people who are really helping the most are maybe the people who aren't the most affected. I don't know. It just does not mean the people who aren't affected aren't helping. And we see this everywhere, every situation, every moment. We can take that step forward from the 100-foot pole every moment. So maybe I will stop there and invite anyone to share or questions, whatever you would like to comment or question about this or something else. And as I said, it might be interesting to hear from Marlene, who lives in that area. But if you don't want to talk, Marlene, that's perfectly fine.
Evening, everyone. Thank you, Amy Rashi, for your Dharma talk. Well, it were very difficult moments, of course, and the first moments where the moment I step out the first time the door, I looked, and it was not my art. Nothing there was what was there the night before. So, and in our case, we have been very lucky because some tiles were up in two or three places. And then it was the rest of the common things, no electricity. No connection, no internet, nothing. So when I step out, the first moment that I step out the door, the world was changed. And when I went to the gates were open because of the wind during the night, no dogs on the yard. Nothing was there like it used to be. So it's a really not knowing moment. Then I went to the end of the gate, and there are trees falling down the street, and no neighbors for the moment, for the first hour. So little by little, we heard people in the street. We gather and we start talking. And it was the first day. It was just between our neighbors, very close neighbors, the first day. I was very calm because I have this sense of I live with a mother that will be 93 next month. So I need to be very, very supportive because she was really afraid of everything. So as an actor, the days after that, I didn't even know because all I knew is 3 days after we went to the supermarket, And it was the first time I had this interaction with other people, more people, and the people mother knows and other peoples that were talking about what happened with their in their lives. And it was a lot. It was a lot for some people. It was really a lot. So I guess I have no options because I need to stay supportive and be here with mother because she follows me wherever I go. So because she knows she needs me and I know she needs me. So for me, it was not difficult, really. What can I say? Little by little, things were happening. I was acting in accord to the situations. I went out for the dogs. The dogs appear. The gates were shut. All kinds of things that were on the yard, that branches that with trees that we never. It's not branches of our trees. It came from in the wind, from everywhere. I cleaned it. So little by little, I tried to reorganize things. Stay with mother that fall ill at the end of the first day. With vomits, she was really very emotional, disturbed. And then it was life. I did what I had to do. And after 3 days, electricity has come. Yesterday, internet. I talked with Seo and Anna. And today, yes, yesterday, internet. Yeah, that's my little story. I know that people are helping a lot. There are hundreds of beds in the fireplace, the fireman place. They are doing the meals and people stay there for the night. 100 the beds there. Oh, and there was a shock when I went the first day. I went to Carvalhinho, the little property we have here nearby, and the oak that gives n name to the place had fallen down, a 200-year-old oak. It crosses the street. We can't enter the property now, so it fell down the oak. It's Carvalhinho, it's the little oak. No, it's a very, very old oak. And it's crossing the little street. Yeah. We are now. But it was really very, very. What you said, Amy Rush, it was. I didn't arrive to this place, but to be the wind, to be the rain, when we are so close in our windows that we're kind of jumping out of the place. Maybe I have been also the wind and the rain. I don't remember to felt it. I was not afraid. It was what it was, and so. And now after the wind, our case in this district, Leiria, there are other things starting about. More rain, And there are the flows, extensive flows near the populations that live near the rivers. Very, very huge, huge, extensive. You lost the vision with water. You just see the roofs of the houses. So it's really calamity here in different places now. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Merlin. Because as you say, it's very important to stay present to the distress, that we feel, and to the devastation. Like you say, you go out and it's not your, you don't recognize anything, and the deep sadness of the 200-year-old oak tree having fallen. It's really important to stay present to that distress, without rushing towards answers or solutions, or without becoming fixed on that distress, but to acknowledge it. It can be moral distress, like in a war, situation of war, that they shouldn't be attacking them, or Gaza, or like in Minneapolis. It can be moral distress, but it can also be like emotional, physical distress, and to stay present to that without, making our actions arise from there. That's where the coming to not knowing is. And Marlene responding, she the situation is she knows her mother needs her, and that so she acts from that place. If she wasn't paying, if she was only paying attention to herself, she wouldn't even notice that her mother needs her. Of course, that's an extreme, it's not a possibility, but you see how we can be in situations where we don't see what the other needs because we're so fixed on ourselves, about our own distress. We don't pay attention to the other. And so we need to act from the direct contact with the distress, with the suffering, with whatever the situation is. And then you know what to do or how to do. Maybe you don't know how, but you know that this calls for a response, this situation. Yeah, so thank you, Marlon. Again, I was happy when I heard from Seo a few days ago. When I asked her, she said that somehow through a friend or something of Anna and Seu had heard from a friend that you were okay. So,
My daughter, I suppose, maybe.
I don't know. Yeah. Anyone else? Questions, comments? Anna?
Hello, everybody. I myself, I'm moving from Lisbon. And at the end of February, I'll be out of Lisbon. And making these movements with all these catastrophes all around, it has been a big, big challenge because the place where I'm moving to is very near the place where we make these retreats in Ribamar, so I'll be very near. And the house I'm moving to is a bit old, and around the house there are many walls that support lands, and the walls are falling down around the house because of the water. So the first time I went to the house to put a few things there, 1 hour passed a big noise and the first wall fall down. It was very frightening because it's just beside the house. When I get out, I see another wall falling up the street. So now I'm here in Lisbon. Especially during the night, the rain doesn't stop and it's very, very strong. And I don't know what's going on there. So next Sunday, because it's elections here, I would do my vote and then I will go there and see what happened. But I don't know the word, but I don't know the exact word, but it's so challenging that I'm moving, in this situation, in this moment, with all these things and all the bureaucracy I must get through and all these kind of adversities, it has been a lot. But I hope I reach there and everything will be okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you use the word challenge. And of course, every moment is a challenge. And then some are more challenging than others, like the one that you are in. In order to navigate the challenges, we need to step forward from the pole, and you say, "I hope that everything will be okay." That, in a sense, is putting your faith in. Okay, I just take the step forward, and we see what happens. There's not sometimes it's so extreme you can't go and hold the walls up, right? So what do you do? And our practice is a great help with this. The wisdom of meeting things as they are, seeing things as they are, the oneness and the true nature of it, and then acting from a place of compassion is that's what our practice is. Challenge is a good word. And our practice helps us to be stronger facing those challenges. At the same time, you know why you're doing what you're doing, and that's probably a big help too. We don't have to, when we say not knowing, it doesn't mean forgetting why you're doing what you're doing. You know why you're moving. And that helps to then maintain, okay, I'm doing this. This is the situation is that I'm moving, and so then you work from there. But yeah, challenge is a good word. Every moment's a challenge because everything is impermanent, so everything's changing all the time, and that's a challenge for us from our positions of our fixed positions and our wanting things to be not impermanent. So it's a challenge. If we let go, if we take a step off the 100-foot pole, then there's no more challenge. And usually, when we take that step, it's actually not 100 feet. It's just one step. It's nothing, actually. But we need to take that step to see that.
I just want to add something else. Leaving all these experiences and all these catastrophes around in Portugal, I came to the conclusion that since I was born, I never lived in a house, and I lived in many houses since I was born till now, where the rain don't come in. In all the houses I lived, the rain came in. All the single houses since I was born. It's incredible. And now he's in this house and lives and it rains, and in the other house, the water has already come inside. So that's something. Thank you.
Well, and the water is an interesting analogy too, because water, it's really hard to stop water, and it takes off so many. It goes through different forms. It adapts to whatever terrain it's on, whatever situation. Water goes there. It adapts, so it finds its way into your life, Anna. Wherever you are, water comes. And whether it's clouds, rain, ice, a lake, an ocean, a river, a puddle, the nature is the same, and yet it manifests differently. This can be a great teaching. The rain, the water follows you wherever you go. I don't know what that means, but you could take it as a koan. And then how do you meet it? How do you meet the water then? How do you, because yet we can't live safely in a place that's always full of water. Human beings are not made for that. A fish would be fine, but human beings, we can't. So how do we then respond to that? So that's an interesting, go on. And when I say interesting, I don't mean that it's, you should like it. Or that I think it's funny. That's not it at all. But, it speaks.
Well, first, I'd like to wish our Portuguese sisters and brothers whatever you need that maybe we could help you with. Susanna sent us messages today because her town is in very dire straits. And at the time, I thought, well, besides money, I'm not going to Portugal right now to pull up trees, but is there anything that we can do? And also just keep our thoughts with you all, because it must be terrifying, really. I mean, when it rains a lot and it starts coming into my building, not my apartment, I start to get nervous. So I can imagine. I wanted to share something. I was thinking today how strange life is. I have a neighbor back behind me, speaking of neighbors, whom I, and until last year, detest is a strong word, but I really didn't like him. He's Serb, I think. I'm not sure. And he's this big, hulking guy. And he comes out. They live in a little house in the back that is totally illegal. Nobody knows this house exists. He didn't build it, but it's off the charts. And he comes out every morning and goes, and I think, ugh. I'm so glad you're not my boyfriend. Well, last year, when I had this business where this guy followed me on the street, I sent a message to all the neighbors saying, let's lock the door downstairs because I was followed and it was kind of scary and everything. And this guy's name is Francis. Francis, all of a sudden, he showed up and said, Debois, if you need anything, I'm here. I said, okay, thank you very much. Okay. So then he helped me fix the door. That was the next part. I mean, I don't. This guy has been back there for over 10 years. We haven't exchanged two words, and he's quite violent in his ways. So now we're in the car to go get the thing to fix the door. I don't know, just say to him. So I said, Francis, I see you around here a lot. Are you retired now? He said, never worked a day in my life. Oh, that's kind of weird. Are you a criminal? How do you live? He has a car and a motorcycle. Never. And then I started thinking, maybe he's not quite with us up here. Because he really is, and he has a girlfriend who's kind of not with us either. Maybe they have some kind of compensation or something. Because he's not, I mean, they're not, obviously not starving. And, you know, he pays his rent and everything. Well, in the last, when did he start doing this? Now that he's my savior, you call me if anybody bothers you, at night or day, which makes me feel, I've told him several times, you don't know how safe this makes me feel. I mean, he's scary. Nobody's followed me since then. So today, he knocks on the door. Deborah! I've got, he's worried that I can't carry my groceries now, which is actually a very good thing for him to worry about, because in 5 or 6 years, this may be very helpful. He brings me packs of water. I never drank water. I drank my water out of the tap, but I didn't tell Francis this. Here's your water. He kind of throws it in the apartment. Well, I've gotten attached to it now. I kind of like bottled water. Doesn't have the same taste as the tap water and everything. So now, after he left, I almost started crying. I'm so moved. It's just the Francis from last year and this Francis, they're the same Francis, but it's so different. I mean, I used to really avoid him. We never spoke. One time I was out in the front with the cat and I was talking to the cat and he said, are you talking to me? And I said, no, I'm talking to the cat. He said, I don't talk to cats. That was our relationship until last year. Now he's bringing me packs of water. Voilà. That's my homily on neighbors.
Thank you. So you see, you just never know. And if we can stay open and not be fixed on our 100-foot pole of disliking or whatever, that's the beauty of our practice too, is it helps us to welcome whatever arises. We sit there on our cushion and we just sit and whatever comes up, whatever comes up, whatever comes up. It can be the neighbor bringing water. It can be the neighbor smelling badly. It can be a noise in the street. It's just this moment. That's the beauty.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for the talk and sharing, Marlene and Anna. I haven't seen any image pictures or anything, but I had heard. Didn't
Lisa, can
realize
you talk
how.
a tad louder? I've been
Yeah,
having a
sorry.
hard time.
I'm sorry. I don't. Anyway, so thank you for sharing all that. I was thinking of the 100-foot pole and how being stuck up on the pole, how there's it's scary to be because there's it's the not knowing. It's there's nothing behind. I'm walking off a 50 meters that you fall and break, and that's what we're. So there's it, as you said, it's a lot of trust to take the next step and trust that there is something will be there to hold your next step. And I remember passing that cone. So yeah, just wanted to share that the fright, the being scared, and so that's what makes us hold on to and to our positions and not giving in. And then also the trust that makes us take that step. That's really important. So thank you.
Yep. Thank you. I guess we should stop here and chant the vows. Thank you.